the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Joining me on the program is Mark Krantewitz. He's a financial aid expert and author of many books on financing education. Mark, let's begin with something that I think many parents don't realize, and I'd like you to comment on this, of the amount of financial aid that's available to parents to help pay for college. Let's begin with that.
Well, there's a considerable amount of financial aid to help parents pay for college. There's money from the federal government, state governments, the colleges and universities themselves, as well as private scholarships and fellowships. And just in the private scholarships and fellowships, there's about $6 billion a year.
So when you look at these kind of programs, you know, we hear a lot of the aid depends on, in other words, your academic scores. Sometimes it also depends on your finances. So can we talk about what it is to qualify and at what level, I guess, do you not qualify? In other words, you just make too much money. Good luck.
So there are two main types of financial aid. There are need-based financial aid, which is based on financial need, the difference between the cost of the college and your ability to pay. And then there's merit-based aid, which is based on academic, artistic, or athletic talent. With regard to the need-based financial aid, even if you don't qualify for grants, you will qualify for low-cost federal education loans. So it's still worthwhile even for the wealthiest of families to apply to file their free application for federal student aid. With regard to the federal Pell Grant, about 94% of recipients have family income under $60,000. But there are many forms of financial aid from the colleges themselves, which are available to middle-income families and even some lower high-income families, not to mention the merit scholarships.
So I know there's sports scholarships, there's academic scholarships. Can you elaborate a little bit? What is it to qualify? I mean, do you have to be Tom Brady to get a sports scholarship or, you know, Einstein to get an academic one?
Well, every scholarship provider is looking for the student who's best qualified for their particular award. So if you're merely average in all dimensions, then you're probably not going to win a private scholarship. On the other hand, if you excel in some area, there's probably a scholarship there for you. Now, there's an element of chance, not just skill and who wins a scholarship. So if you want to win a scholarship, it's best to apply for multiple scholarships for which you're qualified. And every additional scholarship application increases your odds of winning a scholarship.
So, Mark, where can parents find out all this aid that's available or scholarships that are available? Because there's so many programs out there that you talk about in your book, but where can you find out about that?
There are two main steps that people should take. One is to file the free application for federal student aid. That's the gateway form that gets you access to need-based financial aid from the federal government, state governments, and most colleges and universities. There's a handful of colleges that use a supplemental form called the CSS profile form for awarding their own grants and scholarships. Then to find private scholarships, you should use a free scholarship matching service like fastweb.com or the College Board's Big Future website. These match your background profile against a large database of scholarships and show you all the scholarships that match your background for which you're eligible. And then it's up to you to apply for these scholarships. The emphasis should be on free. You don't get better information by paying for it. In fact, you get better information from the free websites because they're able to justify their existence by increasing the number of qualified matches for their students.
Mark, what about the issue, like, let's say you have a child that wants to specialize either in medicine or engineering or something, and they've identified specific colleges that have programs for that specialty. Let's talk about getting to know the college that your kids may want to go to and how important that is, because every college, as you say, has different programs, different grants, different scholarships. So what about getting to know the colleges your kids are interested in?
Every college has a net price calculator. The net price is the difference between total college costs, not just tuition and fees, but also room and board, book supplies and equipment, transportation, and miscellaneous expenses. And the grants, the scholarships, and other gift aid, this is money that doesn't need to be repaid. The net price is your true bottom line cost at college. It's the amount of money you're going to have to pay from your savings, from contributions, from income, and from a reasonable amount of debt. And you need to evaluate the net price to see if that college is really affordable for you. If your net price divided by your annual income is less than 25%, then you can afford to enroll in that college and you'll graduate with a reasonable amount of debt. If it's more than 25%, then you're going to have to take on too much debt to attend that college.
So what about the issue? I know some parents are, and especially when kids are right out of high school, maybe they don't know what it is that they want to do for a living. Mark, what about going to a junior college for 2 years locally where the cost is cheaper and then transferring and applying for grants after that 2 year period? Can you speak to that?
If your intention is to obtain a bachelor's degree, it's better to start off at a 4 year institution instead of taking a detour through a 2 year college. 2 year colleges are great if your goal is to obtain an associate's degree or certificate. But only about a fifth of students who intend to obtain a bachelor's degree and start off at a two-year institution succeed in getting a bachelor's degree within 6 years. That compares to two-thirds of the students who start off at a four-year institution. Many four-year institutions have a core curriculum of classes that are foundational in nature that every student takes, and that helps expose you to a variety of academic fields of potential interest. So it may be better if you're just trying to find what you're interested in to go to one of those colleges. I'd also suggest taking a skills and interest inventory, which is a quiz that asks you questions about what classes you found interesting, what other things that are strike you of interest. And then it uses that to identify potential majors for you, which might help you crystallize your particular major that you want to pursue. It is important to figure out what you want to be when you grow up as early as possible, because if you end up transferring from one college to another or switching academic majors, this can add a few semesters to your college career, and that's a few semesters of additional costs.
Now, one of the things that we encourage parents to do, and especially if you start out early, Mark, let's talk about 529 plans, because a lot of states have some very favorable plans. And the nice thing about a 529 plan, the money you put to work in that plan grows, defers tax-free. And when you use it for college, it becomes tax-free. So it eases some of the burden of paying for college.
529 plans have significant tax and financial aid incentives that make it easier to save for college. You mentioned that the earnings accumulate on a tax-deferred basis, and if used entirely for qualified expenses, are tax-free. In many states, the contributions you make to your 529 plan are tax-deductible on the state income tax return. In some cases, it's a tax credit. You don't get that when you save for retirement in a Roth IRA, but you do get that with your 529 plan. Money in a 529 plan is also reported much more favorably on financial aid forms. It's treated as a parent asset and not a child asset. And 529 plans have significant estate planning benefits. They're considered to be removed from the donor's estate, so they don't hurt you from a estate planning perspective.
So we have the tax advantages, and as you mentioned, some states will allow you to deduct those contributions on your state tax return, and every state has a little different version of that. So wouldn't you recommend, if you were thinking of doing something like that, let's say, I don't know, you're in the state of Arizona, and maybe they have a 529 plan. Mark, what about if, you know, you're in a position or a job where you have to move around a lot? You're transferred. Maybe you're in the military or something like that. So you start out with one state putting money aside in a 529 plan. 5 years later, you're moved to another state.
So there's a trade-off sometimes between state income tax breaks and the fees in a state's plan. The lower fees matter more when the child's young, and the state income tax breaks matter more when the child typically enters high school. When you move from one state to another, you don't have to take the money out of one state's plan and move it into the other state's plan. In fact, some states will try to recapture your state income tax breaks if you roll over the money to another state's plan. You can just keep the money in that state's plan, and when it comes time to pay for college, you can choose which state's plan or plans you're going to take the distributions from. Typically, if you're going to have to take a non-qualified distribution, you want to take it from the plan that has the lowest earnings, because the earnings are assumed to be proportional in the distribution. Whereas if you are taking a qualified distribution, you'd want to take it from the plan that has the highest percentage earnings. That way, if you do eventually have to take a non-qualified distribution, you'll be left with the lowest tax hit. Also, another benefit is the tax, if you take a non-qualified distribution, it is taxed at the recipient's rate, which could be the child, doesn't have to be the parent, and the child typically has a lower tax bracket than the parent who made the contributions originally, or grandparents who made the contributions.
So what do you do? Let's take an example. Let's say that you have three different 529 plans over a 20-year period, because you've moved to three different states because of your job. Now junior starts college. Anything a parent should know if you have these three 529 plans?
You can use the 529 plans for any college in any state. Doesn't matter what state you created the 529 plan in. So you have flexibility to choose which of those three 529 plans you're going to use to pay for your child's first year, second year, third year, fourth year. You could do distributions from two of them. The key is any distributions to be qualified have to occur in the same tax year as the expenses are incurred. So you can't anticipate, well, next year I'm going to have to pay tuition, so I'm going to take a distribution now, hold on to the money, and then pay it next year. You need to take that distribution in the same tax year in which you pay the expense. But you could choose whichever one you want in order to pay the expenses. I tend to recommend that when you're taking distributions from 529 plans, you first carve out about $4,000 of tuition and textbook expenses that you're going to use to qualify for the American Opportunity Tax Credit, because every dollar of that credit is worth more per dollar of qualified expenses than a tax redistribution from a 529 plan. So you want to maximize that tax credit. If your 529 plans are not sufficient to pay for all 4 years or 5 years of college costs beyond that American Opportunity Tax Credit, then you're going to probably need loans, and you need to figure out how many loans you're going to need to borrow and work backwards from the senior year to the freshman year to make sure you are borrowing the right amount. And then you use the 529 plan to fill in the gaps. So if you've carved out $4,000 for tuition and textbook expenses, and you've focused on the subsidized Stafford loan from the federal government, then you might have thousands of dollars of additional costs, and you can use the 529 plan to pay for that.
I want to go back to something you brought up that I think is very important. So let's say that you're a grandparent, you're fortunate enough to be wealthy and subject to estate taxes. It seems like there's a real opportunity here, if you have that kind of wealth, to set up a 529 plan for maybe your grandchildren and then have that be an exempt from a 40% estate tax rate. That, to me, sounds like a real opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great way of avoiding estate taxes. The money that you contribute is immediately removed from your estate. The main exception is if you use five-year gift tax averaging to make a lump sum contribution to the 529 plan. That money, that contribution is treated as though it occurred proportionally over the five-year period. So if you were to die in, say, the third year, then 3 years of that five-year contribution will be removed from your state, and the remaining 2 years will count as though they were still in your estate. But it's great for estate planning purposes. And it's a way for you to leave a legacy for your children or even grandchildren.
Is there anything in particular parents should be aware of when looking at a 529 plan in their state, Mark? Is there like a 1, 2, 3 things that you would want to see in any plan you're looking at?
Well, the first thing I would want to see is what the fees are. Because if you're earning, say, 6% annual return on investment on average, and the plan charges a 1% fee, that's 1/6 of your earnings. Some of the advisor sold plans can charge as much as 5 or 6% annual fees,
wow,
which could consume all of your earnings. So you want to look carefully at the fees. I tend to recommend direct sold plans over advisor sold plans because the fees are lower. And there are some 529 plans that are direct sold that have fees as less than 0.5%. And so you certainly want to look at the plans that have less than a full percentage point, but there are some that are much, much cheaper. Minimizing expenses is the key to maximizing net returns. And every 529 plan has what's called an age-based or enrollment date investment plan. Some of them will have 3 conservative, moderate, and aggressive versions of the plan. The idea behind these dynamic investment glide paths is they start off with a high percentage in stocks, which are higher return but also higher risk. And as college approaches, each year they reduce the percentage equities, shifting the investment to a more risk-free mix or asset allocation, as it's called. About 2/3 of families are invested in these age-based asset allocations. And the reason why this is important is over any 17-year period, you're going to have at least one bear market and at least 3 corrections. A correction is a reduction in the stock market of at least 10%. A bear market is at least 20%. So you can't avoid market downturns, but using an age-based asset allocation lets you manage that risk. When the child's young, you can afford to have more invested in stocks because if there is a drop in the stock market like we're experiencing right now, you don't have as much invested and you have many years ahead of you to recover from those losses. Whereas when you're right before the child is about to enroll in college and you need to take money out of the 529 plan, you don't want to have to realize huge losses in doing so. So when the child is about to enroll in college, having a very low exposure to risky investments is very important.
You know, aren't these age-based plans similar to what we do in retirement planning with target funds? So if I know I'm going to retire in 10 years, I might go with the 10-year target fund. Same thing if you've got a new grandchild, you know it's going to be 18, 20 years. Maybe you get an age base for a 20-year plan, so you know it'll be more conservatively based the closer your grandchild gets to college. And I think that takes away some of the misgivings I think some grandparents have, Mark, where they think, you know, I don't want to manage this. I don't want to worry about the stock market. This is an easier way for them to do that.
Absolutely. And it's exactly like target date funds. The main difference is the horizon is often shorter. When you're saving for retirement, you might have a financial horizon of as much as 40 years. When you're saving for college, you tend to have 10 or 20 year horizon. And another feature of 529 plans is they all have automatic investment plans where they will transfer money from your checking account or savings account to the 529 plan every month. So you can set it up and forget it. And you tell them when that money arrives in the 529 plan account, how you want it invested. Do you want it all invested in an all-stock fund? Do you want it invested in bond funds or certificates of deposit? There are 18 529 plans that offer CDs as an investment option. Or do you want it in an age-based asset allocation? And if so, which one? The ones that are more aggressive or the ones that are less aggressive?
So in summing up, Mark, there are a lot of aid plans that are out there that's very important for parents to explore, whether they have money or they don't have money, whether their child's a genius or the next Tom Brady. And then there's also 529 plans that you could use, put aside. Different states have different ways they look at it. Some give you deductions, some don't. But there's multiple ways that to fund. But I think the most important thing I think you would recommend is start planning.
And the sooner you start saving for college, the better off you'll be. If you start saving from birth, about a third of your college savings goal will come from the earnings. If you wait until the child enters high school, less than 10% will come from the earnings. And you'll have to save six times as much to reach the same college savings goal. Now, it's often for many families, the hardest part is just getting started. But the automatic investment plans with many state 529 plans let you get started at just $15 or $25 a month, which you might be able, many families might be able to do. Now, if you want to save a third of college costs, you probably need to save $250 a month for an in-state public college. But even $15 or $20 a $25 a month will get you started. And every dollar you save is a dollar less you're going to have to borrow.
All right. Well, listen, Mark, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, you cover this area extensively, and you've also written about it in books extensively. How could they find out more?
They can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is MKANT. I have a public policy paper website called studentaidpolicy.com. And I write for a variety of publications, the College Investor website, Wall Street Journal, Forbes.com. So you can find my writings in many places.
All right. Well, listen, Mark, thanks for that update and that great information. All the best to you, and I hope you come back again.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.